It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. This week, it's the full crew. I'm Ben Ostro. I'm joined by Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. So we're going to jump right in and take a few quick takes from our crew here at the Football Zebras. And I'll start with you, Cam.
So we have another coin toss situation. And it's something that took place between the Panthers and Falcons game, the overtime coin toss, where Clay Martin was giving the options to quarterback Bryce Young, who was the Carolina captain, who won the toss. And it appeared that he afforded them the option to kick off as well as the direction they wanted to kick in. And people were like, whoa, wait a second. Did he not just realize that he gave Carolina both options? Something that was kind of talked about, and we were seeing some comments about it. But, you know, especially with these new overtime rules this year that, you know, if they've drastically changed strategy, we're seeing a lot more teams elect to start on defense in overtime, knowing that they're going to be guaranteed a possession, unless there's a defensive score, obviously, but more so than ever before. This is just a way of Martin being proactive, and he most likely asked the captains or even the head coaches their options of what they wanted to do if they had won the toss. I had mentioned in our live blog that this is done at all levels, even at the high school level. We'll ask the head coaches in pregame, do your captains know what they want to do if they win the toss? And what is that? Let us know. So I also pointed out that the Falcons captain, linebacker Caden Ellis, seemed to be all for it. He confirmed his choice. He nodded. I feel like he would have, you know, we saw the Phil Luckett. It's almost Thanksgiving. We saw the Phil Luckett toss and how people were objecting to that, even though he was right. And we've seen other tosses in recent time where if there seemed to have been an error, there's, you know, hey, wait a minute. You know, one of the captains will recognize that. But everyone seemed to know what was going on. So it really speaks to the fact that Martin was just really being proactive. We don't want these new rules to create some sort of controversy or flub by a captain at the coin toss. So to get rid of all ambiguity, it's a great job by Clay Martin to be proactive, get those options before the toss so we can get through it smoothly and not have any issues that could potentially lead to a team being locked into an option that they didn't want. So smells of smoke, but no fire, no issues here. And in fact, it was a good job of game management by Clay Martin. Need that at the white hat position, and especially with this new change this year. He was all over it to make sure there were no issues.
And that's it, exactly. This new rule will kind of frustrate captains if they're not really up on all of the nuances. On top of that, a coach might just throw something out there at the last minute and throw in a change there. You know, I mean, actually kicking off, I thought a few years ago, why is that still in the rule book? Why don't they just remove it? But it remains, and now it is it's viable option in overtime. And yeah, we don't want to see overtime be decided on a captain's flub. I'm going to send it over to you, Chris Soibert. What did you see this week?
Well, we had a defensive struggle in the Philadelphia-Detroit game. And, you know, for some that like defensive struggles, it was a good game. For those of us that like offense, it was kind of hard to watch. But toward the end, third down, Philadelphia trying to run out the clock. Pass interference call on a route that AJ Brown appeared to almost give up on. You watch the replay, the pass is actually well over his head. And he's kind of hand fighting with the defender. But a late flag came in. They called him for defensive pass interference. And I think the consensus with us as well is that it was the wrong call. It was not a restriction. It did not look like there was any sort of bucket, as not the chum bucket that we posted on our Twitter feed, and not any other sort of bucket that the DPI would fall into. At best, they asked Alex Kemp after the game, you know, what did the officials see? You know, the pool reporter, and he claimed there was a restriction. That's what was observed. And actually, when you look at the video, you can kind of see a little bit. But I think it, again, is more A.J. Brown trying to create separation and leaving his sort of what I would call his inside hand extended toward the defender, which I guess can be mistaken as sort of a restriction. But this goes to, I think, a bigger issue that some of us that work high school have with NFL officiating, where sometimes they do appear to be over technical in some of their calls, where I don't know if it's a message from on high where they're trying to promote offense. So they really want the officials to call anything they think will, that will restrict sort of the receivers from making the catch. While on the high school side, we're almost told the exact opposite, where call the obvious, call the ones that the entire stadium sees, and that's it, because we are not there to be the show. But I don't think actually the NFL officials want to be the show either. It's just what they're being told to call. So while I understand the frustration, while I understand that we went through the whole experiment with reviewing DPI, I don't think that's the answer either. It's a messaging problem, I think, for the NFL with their officials on what they want called and what they don't want called. And I do think it's where high school gets it right in this case, where they want the big things called. And the NCAA is kind of a little bit in between. But ultimately, it does come down to how the NFL wants their games to be officiated. And for better or worse, I think they want those called more often than not.
Well, we do see that there is some emphasis on pass interference. It was brought to the officials on a few occasions, on one tape at least that I know of, that it was keying specifically on those aspects and, you know, making sure that we have the material restriction, because we can place it into a bucket at all times. We could say, well, this is that, but then the last check is, was there material restriction on the play? And, you know, just, you know, out of all of that, I really think that, you know, once that's reviewed on tape, it's going to be, you know, plainly obvious. And unfortunately, it sealed the ability to have a comeback. And, you know, we discussed this before. These things will happen in this case. And I know we've heard all sorts of things about sky judges and all that, but you know, we've been down that road already. Very difficult to re-officiate the play. Mark Schultz, what do you got for us?
Well, another week, another tush push, although this is a fake tush push. In Baltimore, Mark Andrews, the tight end, lined up in the Wildcat formation, took the snap, and instead of running forward into a scrum, he rolled out to the near side as we were looking at it, ran down the sideline for a beautiful touchdown run. In the past, people have said, well, to judge the false start and the neutral zone infractions and the offside, maybe the down judge and the line judge need to pinch way in to take a look at it. Maybe they get a better view of it, maybe even crouch down. And we said on a prior podcast that there's going to be a fake one day, or there's going to be a fumble, or something is going to happen, and then the wing officials will be out of position. Had they pinched in on that play, the wing official would have had Andrews run behind him, or the official would have had to turn his back onto the play and run like mad to the sideline, not being able to judge the outside blocks, the seal blocks on the end as Andrews ran by, nor were they going to be in a good position to judge out of bounds down the sideline or even forward progress. So that was a good example of why the officials start each play, all the wing officials start each play on the sidelines and a lot of times off the sidelines, on the back of the restraining area, to get a good wide panoramic view and to stay out of the way in case something surprisingly happens, like a surprise play, a trick play, or something goes wrong. So that's why the officials stay put and they don't pinch in on the tush push.
And I think we saw that in some of the older films of the NFL in the 1940s and 1950s, where you had a wing at that time, there was only one short wing, it would come out inside the numbers in some cases to officiate the play. And we'll wrap up our quick takes with Pat Weber.
Yeah, we had our second spitting incident of the season over the weekend in the game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jalen Ramsey and Ja'Marr Chase got into it a little bit. Jalen Ramsey ends up throwing a punch and getting ejected from the game. And in the post game, he claimed that he had been spit on, and Ja'Marr Chase denied it, but video showed clearly that he did indeed spit at Jalen Ramsey. That has resulted in Chase being suspended for a game. In the Jalen Carter incident in week one, we noted that the umpire did a really good job of being in the area of where there was smoke and saw the spitting incident. However, in this case, the spitting was not caught initially. And as we see a lot, the second guy in is the one who got caught. Granted, Ramsey threw a big punch, so that's hard to miss. But now that this has happened again and video caught Chase, he's being suspended. One interesting thing that I saw from Florio at Pro Football Talk, I think, is the one to put it out there. But Jalen Carter never actually appealed his suspension with time served that he got from the league. So now that Chase is appealing, he could point to the fact that there is not a strong precedent of spitting lead to a suspension. So we'll see where that goes.
Just want to add one quick take on my end, where we have a bunch of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties for celebrations or post-play activity, and they're not even pointed at players. We had like a nose wipe gesture, which was specifically sent out to players on tape that they don't want to see that sort of thing as part of the celebration. So it's known, and then it's flagged immediately. On Sunday night, we had players jump onto the goalpost. We also saw it again on Monday night. And this is, again, a very hard line on, the using the goalpost as a prop. If you're jumping on it, it's not meant for holding up human beings. And so they enforce the penalty rightly. And, a lot of people are complaining about it, but these are like really bright lines. And, that's 45 yards right there in those instances that could have been saved in one week. So I don't know if we're in the middle of the season and everybody's forgetting what they heard at the beginning, but a lot of penalties that really could have been avoided. And unfortunately, on social media, it carries out to the officials. It really should not. I'm going to switch gears and take a look at over the weekend, we saw a sideline interference situation that caught our eye. And we originally reported it that where it was part of a double foul. So Broncos had intercepted the pass. And after that, there was a blindside block. Further down during the play, there was sideline interference where Sean Payton, once again, drawing a penalty. But he interfered with down judge Derek Bowers, who was coming down the sideline. He lands on the field and is now really out of officiating the interception return. And we thought it was a little odd that the penalty for the sideline interference was declined, because we've always known that fouls against an official would be enforced between downs. Basically what that is you take care of everything else from the previous play, all the penalties from the previous play, enforce that. Then you set the stakes and put the then assess the between downs foul. So in this case, it would have put it further back. And that's why at the beginning of the podcast, you hear first and 25 being yelled out by several officials, because that's a situation where it's a first and 10 and the 15 yards are taken back from it between down. So the interesting part that we found out after asking around is, yes, it is a foul against an official, but in this case, they took this off of that list, a sideline interference off of that list. To me, that seems to be a big error to have done that, because sideline interference is a little more serious than, oh, you got in the way. So I'm going to throw this out to you guys on your opinions on sideline interference being just one of the fouls that can mix in with the live ball fouls. And in this case, it was declined.
Ben, I kind of share your opinion. I can see why the NFL maybe classifies this as different, because it's not in the same area as shoving an official or, you know, intentionally physically contacting them or going after them in an unsportsmanlike way. They just kind of got caught in the wrong place. However, as we all know on this that worked the sideline, there is a nice big wide white stripe that is for the officials and the officials only. And it is a safety issue for us to be able to keep our eyes on the field and move up and down the sideline and officiate the play and not have to worry about running into somebody. And it should be so simple to stay out of that area that I really don't think they should differentiate that and make it a lesser penalty.
I also agree that, and it is enforced at the high school level. It's always enforced. And I think it should also be enforced at the NFL level. But who am I? I'm not on the competition. But it can be a very dangerous situation, not only for the officials, but for the coaches. There was, in my area, there was a wing official who was running down the sideline and ran into one of the assistant coaches that was in the white, and he was a, shall we say, of retirement age by several years, and he got hurt. The official was okay, but the older assistant coach gentleman got hurt. So it's dangerous not only for the officials, but also for the coaches. And I had to feel for Derek Bowers because in week one last year, 2024, a play landed in his lap. It wasn't sideline interference. The players just crashed into him and out of bounds flying he went. And he was hurt and he missed the rest of the season. But again, another sideline collision. And thankfully, he wasn't hurt. I don't think Sean Payton was intentionally trying to gain an unfair advantage. I think he was just absentmindedly standing in the white. Some coaches do like to get as close to the field as they can. And sometimes at the high school level, a veteran coach might test a wing official and stay in the white. You could call it a measuring contest, shall we say. And you know, whose sideline is this? Is this the 25-year-old rookie's sideline, or is this the 55-year-old State Hall of Fame coach's sideline? Draw that line. That sideline, that area of white, at all levels of officiating, is yours. Enforce it. Flag it if you have to.
My goodness, that was as close as Mark has ever gotten to cursing on the podcast. But as a wing official, and I see these happen a lot when there's a change of possession. So there's excitement on the sideline. People are jumping up and down. They get overzealous. They get in that area. But at the same time, the officials are kicking it into reverse mechanics. They may already be behind because of the abrupt change in play. So, Cam, you've worked on the wings there. You know, put us down on the field. You know, you're looking out onto the field. I'm sure there's like some apprehension that you're running into a space that you have no vision on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it happens a lot. It's something that you just, for the newer officials out there, you just need to gain confidence in controlling your sideline. Like Mark said, that Hall of Fame coach, it may be his team sideline, but that 6-foot white area is your area. That is the restricted area for you to operate, for you to work, and no one should be in there. Our general mechanic in Massachusetts is a coach can come out to the numbers to get their play call. Sometimes coordinators, if there are teams on defense, a defensive coordinator will step out and call the defensive scheme. But our general mechanic is once the huddle breaks, everyone's got to be clear from the restricted area. And Ben, it's a good point that you mentioned going into reverse mechanics, because I've seen this as well. A lot of times coaches think, oh, if I'm standing behind the play, the official is not going to be moving in my direction. So I can get a little more space. I can get a little closer. My final game of the regular season this year, we actually had, it was an interception down near the goal line. And in fact, both teams had some members of their coaching staff in the restricted area. And on the side of the field opposite me, there were actually some coaches that were standing like on the hashes on the field. And we hightailed it into reverse mechanics. And we actually had offsetting sideline interference penalties because both teams were in the restricted area. They're enforced as, if it had only been one, they're enforced as non-player fouls in high school. As Mark said, they'll always be enforced as dead ball fouls. But yeah, it's something very interesting. And, you know, you just got to make sure that it's all about safety. So we always talk about player safety. The rule for collisions in the restricted area is also for the safety of the official. And I'm glad that is in there and that it's more of a zero tolerance. It's a 15 automatically. It's not like general sideline interference where you're without contact. And I know at high school, you can issue a sideline warning followed by 5 yards, followed by 15. But once you make contact in the restricted area, it's automatically 15, always enforced, no matter what.
And there is a reason, obviously, the NFL has moved their umpires out of harm's way as well, right? So they're trying to prevent, you know, officials are unpadded, usually older folks like we are, not Cam not included here. But again, that's if you get hit by a 350-pound linebacker, you know, you are going down and you're going to be injured regardless. And I know some high school or states for high school are looking at moving the umpire out of harm's way as well. I know college has one there and they still have a center judge in the back. So, it's a problem. And to further Cam's point, we can go back to that the great call last week from the back judge on that one touchdown call. But you could tell from that he's very surprised because, again, in general, officials aren't looking at the ball. So they don't necessarily know where the play is coming from because they're either zoned up or they're looking ahead of a play and they can be surprised. And every official on the field can be in harm's way, obviously, depending on where the play goes. So, you know, I agree with the sentiment here that this should be left as a foul that's enforced regardless of what else happens on the play.
And that's the NFL using their way of enforcing it by doing the between downs enforcement. It's sort of unusual. It falls into that same category that you would have for, too many men in the huddle or just some sort of unsportsmanlike that occurs when the action that ended the play is completely done, everybody's been separated, and somebody tries to reinstigate it. Well, then you want to make sure that goes to the next down, and so they will do it in that case. But it's very rare, unless it is a foul against an official. And I do find that very odd that they did take that out because, as you said, there will be the same penalty assessed for we've warned you once and you're still in that area. Yes, we didn't collide, thankfully, but you did cause me to move out of the way and potentially onto the field where I might get mixed up in the play depending on which direction it's going. And I think there might have been at the competition committee level thinking that, okay, well, yes, we issue sideline warnings. Are we really going to put it 15 yards plus 15 yards added to the down distance if it's against the offense? And of course, if it's against the defense, it's just it doesn't really have that much of an impact other than the fact that it's guaranteed to be enforced. So I'd like to see them revisit that removal in the offseason. And, maybe we'll send in our little letter of recommendation that we get that reinstated there, because I really think that that's something important, that it's just not only that, oh, we got in the way. It's that it is very serious. And yeah, you could have concussions, you could have season ending injuries, or in the case that Mark mentioned, that you could have somebody that ends their career on that sort of collision. And goodness, we've seen other types of collisions that were unfortunate parts of the play. Gary Arthur comes to mind several years ago. And you mentioned Derek Bowers also had an incident on the sideline and it was part of the play. And it's just, okay, unlucky that happened, but this is preventable. And to make sure that is really enforced as preventable, I think that has to always be enforced no matter what. And the NFL chooses to do that by using the between downs enforcement. And with that, we wrap up an episode of the First and 25 podcast. You can catch us on any of the podcasting platforms. So pick your favorite one and like us, subscribe, It's appointment viewing. You can listen to our podcast during your lunch break every Tuesday. I'm Ben Ostro. Thanks to Mark Schultz, Cam Felipe, Chris Sorbitt, Pat Weber. We'll catch you next time on the First and 25 podcast.